fight
for the future is now.
This is the War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the War Room. My name is Harrison Smith, sitting in today for Owen Schroyer, who himself was sitting in for Alex Jones. We're playing a little bit of musical chairs, a little Chinese fire drill here at InfoWars. I'm so glad that you're here, and I'm glad that I'm here, too. I've been hosting Off Limits. It's a little streaming show I've been doing at 7 p.m. every night. But I got to tell you, it feels good to be back behind the desk. So I've been excited for this moment for a little while, and I've printed out a forest worth of articles, and I'm going to get to all of them, by God. I'm going to try my hardest to get to all of them, because we have so much unbelievable news just covering a myriad of topics, and they're all bombshell. I mean, it's all crazy. So stay with us. This 3 hours will be jam-packed full of information, fantastic videos, reports, all sorts of good stuff. I'll be taking your calls a little bit later in the show, but first, let's go to this video of the Mueller statement on the special counsel report. Obviously, Robert Mueller gave this talk earlier today. Everybody on either side is hearing what they want to hear from it. Let's hear it from the man himself. And on the other side of the break, we will break it down as unbiased as I possibly can. This is The War Room. I'm Harrison Smith. Here is Robert Mueller with a statement on the special counsel report.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being here. 2 years ago, the acting attorney general asked me to serve as special counsel, and he created the special counsel's office. The appointment order directed the office to investigate Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. This included investigating any links or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the Trump campaign. Now, I have not spoken publicly during our investigation. I'm speaking out today because our investigation is complete. The Attorney General has made the report on our investigation largely public. We are formally closing the special counsel's office, and as well, I'm resigning from the Department of Justice to return to private life. I'll make a few remarks about the results of our work. But beyond these few remarks, it is important that the office's written work speak for itself. Let me begin where the appointment order begins, and that is interference in the 2016 presidential election. As alleged by the grand jury in an indictment, Russian intelligence officers, who were part of the Russian military, launched a concerted attack on our political system. The indictment alleges that they used sophisticated cyber techniques to hack into computers and networks used by the Clinton campaign. They stole private information and then released that information through fake online and identities and through the organization WikiLeaks. The releases were designed and timed to interfere with our election and to damage a presidential candidate. And at the same time, as the grand jury alleged in a separate indictment, a private Russian entity engaged in a social media operation where Russian citizens posed as Americans in order to influence an election. These indictments contain allegations, and we are not commenting on the guilt or the innocence of any specific defendant. Every defendant is presumed innocent unless and until proven guilty. The indictments allege, and the other activities in our report describe, efforts to interfere in our political system. They needed to be investigated and understood, and that is among the reasons why the Department of Justice established our office.
That's Robert Mueller explaining the very basic concepts of law and order to the Democrats for the information of the Democrats. Yes, you have to prove someone's guilty. They don't have to prove they're innocent. I know this is a groundbreaking announcement from Robert Mueller. We'll hear more from him on the other side. Stay with us. This is The War Room. Infowars.com. Infowarsstore.com is where you go to support what you do here. Everything we do at Infowars. Your support means so much. So please do go to Infowarsstore.com. We'll be right back in 1 minute. Stay with us.
Yeah.
back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. It's Wednesday, May 29th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining us. Harrison Smith sitting in for Owen Schroyer. Obviously, the big news of the day, top story, is this announcement that Robert Mueller made. We heard a little bit of it before the break, but we're going to listen to just a few minutes more of it here. Then I'll come back with some commentary. But I'm going to be talking a lot about the EU elections that took place this last week, because very interesting things happened within that election. Very interesting things are happening as an outcome of this election. There's a lot to get into, a lot of facets to tackle. The big tech meddling. I mean, just a lot of stuff about the EU elections that I really want to break down, especially the UK election centered around Brexit as it was. So I'll be talking a lot about that later in this show, and about Iran, and about mental health. Let's say I'll be talking about mental health a little bit later. That's a little tease for you. But for now, let's stick with the top stories. And of course, the other major top story, which we'll get to in just a little bit, is that a man has set himself on fire near the White House. There's some incredible video of that. Hopefully we have that. And guys, we don't have that video yet. Let's try to pull that up. But for now, let's go back to Robert Mueller giving his speech earlier today, explaining to the Democrats how the process of law and order works and what the role of an investigator is. Basic stuff that apparently is just flown over the heads of the Democrats and needs to be explained to them like a child. So here he is, Robert Mueller, as he continues his speech from earlier today.
The report has two parts, addressing the two main issues we were asked to investigate. The first volume of the report details numerous efforts emanating from Russia to influence the election. This volume includes a discussion of the Trump campaign's response to this activity, as well as our conclusion that there was insufficient evidence to charge a broader conspiracy. And in the second volume, the report describes the results and analysis of our obstruction of justice investigation involving the president. The order appointing me special counsel authorized us to investigate actions that could obstruct the investigation. And we conducted that investigation, and we kept the office of the acting attorney general apprised of the progress of our work. And as set forth in the report, after that investigation, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime. The introduction to the volume 2 of our report explains that decision. It explains that under long-standing department policy, a president cannot be charged with a federal crime while he is in office. That is unconstitutional. Even if the charge is kept under seal and hidden from public view, that too is prohibited. The special counsel's office is part of the Department of Justice, and by regulation, it was bound by that department policy. Charging the president with a crime was therefore not an option we could consider. The department's written opinion explaining the policy makes several important points that further informed our handling of the obstruction investigation. Those points are summarized in our report, and I will describe two of them for you. First, the opinion explicitly permits the investigation of a sitting president because it is important to preserve evidence while memories are fresh and documents available. Among other things, that evidence could be used if there were co-conspirators who could be charged now. And second, the opinion says that the Constitution requires a process other than the criminal justice system to formally accuse a sitting president of wrongdoing. And beyond department policy, we were guided by principles of fairness. It would be unfair to potentially accuse somebody of a crime when there can be no court resolution of the actual charge. So that was Justice Department policy. Those were the principles under which we operated. And from them, we concluded that we would not reach a determination one way or the other about whether the president committed a crime. That is the office's final position, and we will not comment on any other conclusions or hypotheticals about the president.
All right. We can pull it down.
So, an independent criminal investigation.
Robert Mueller is, by my estimation, what we in the British Navy called a deep old file. He plays his cards close to his chest, holds his cards close to his chest, and you can see why people refer to him as honorable and respectable, because the man has the charisma of a wet log. But you know, maybe that makes him the perfect person to act as, but pretend to be, play the role of an impartial investigator. Now, we know from the beginning that that was not his role, and there was always the conspiracy theory. I'm pretty sure it was just the Q thing, where it was like, trust the plan, Robert Mueller's on our side. Folks, Robert Mueller has never been on our side. He's not on our side. He has been a career politician that is as crooked as they come. Now, just because he came out with this report that did not condemn President Trump doesn't mean he's on President Trump's side. It means he couldn't fabricate or create or find any evidence to present. Well, what's he going to do? He can't make it up. So, of course, he's got to let President Trump off. But he was put into the office to destroy President Trump. He is a co-conspirator with all this, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I read things, he was put in there to destroy President Trump and to give it the veneer and the varnish of impartiality. So there, it's easy to understand why the Democrats were getting the dog whistle that they seem to have gotten, because the way he phrased it right there seems like he very much was subtly, by omission, encouraging impeachment proceedings, some sort of censorship from the Congress, from some sort of oversight committee on the president, because he basically implies that if I could have brought charges, I would have, but I couldn't because he's a sitting president. I'm just being honest. That's sort of what I got from the speech right there. And that's, whether that's just sort of red meat for the Democrats to latch onto, whether that is just a strange way of wording things. But the point is that he came out with nothing new during this speech. We have all the information we need in the Mueller report, and it completely exonerates President Trump and everybody close to him. And that's one thing that he did say in that speech right there, where he said, we can't charge a president, but it's good to do the investigation because we could charge co-conspirators, but they haven't charged any co-conspirators. They've charged people for other stuff. Roger Stone right now is fighting for his life, against these felonious charges or fake charges. And you have, all sorts of people that have been charged with stuff, but nothing actually having to do with collusion, nothing actually having to do with obstructing justice. The president literally could have fired Robert Mueller at any time. And, if you understand the reading of the law, such as AG Barr has, Bill Barr basically, comes out and says, look, you can't charge the president with a crime for doing what he is allowed to do by virtue of his office. And this is fairly obvious. So I can see why the Democrats, got the dog whistle that, oh my gosh, we need to impeach. That's what Robert Mueller was saying, is we need to charge him ourselves. That's what they hear. That's what they want to hear. Go for it. I think they should. I think they should impeach President Trump. I think that'll do wonders for them in 2020. I'm sure they'll be able to destroy Donald Trump. I mean, the investigation didn't get him. The setup through the FBI didn't get him. The leaked tapes didn't get him. Nothing they've tried so far has even dented God Emperor Trump in the slightest. But this might work. Maybe this will work. Maybe this will convince people that you're not insane. And that you don't just have a vendetta against the sitting president and hate him beyond all logic or reasoning and just want to destroy him. Go out, go impeach him, give it a try, okay? Because 2020 is coming up, and normal people, as much as they want to bury their heads in the sand, the insanity of the Democrats is of such overwhelming force that it's breaking through. It's breaking through to the average person, and they look around going, what is going on with the Democrats? They're obsessed with Trump. All they care about is trying to impeach him. All they want to do is obstruct and destroy him. And frankly, I'm getting sick of it. I've been sick of it for a while. I think the normal people are getting sick of it as well. So, if anything, this little speech will just be yet another thing for the Democrats to latch onto, as if they have a foot to stand on, which unfortunately for them, they don't. Stay with us, folks. More War Room on the other side.
Infowars.com/show.
White people hate me, they say that I'm using my privilege for evil, I get it, hey. Black people hate me, they say that I'm racist, my feelings don't match with their message, whoa. Feminists hate me because I believe that their movement is angry and sexist, woo. My girlfriend hates me and I don't know why, but I love her, whatever, forget it, yeah. And gay people hate me because when I see something I love,
man, that was my mistake telling y'all to pull that song up for the intro, because I just want to sit here and listen to the whole thing. That's a great song by Tom McDonald.
The government robs them, the pop culture kills them, the rappers convinced them to ruin their brain. Go ahead and say all
of right. All right, we'll get back to the news. Enough fun. Time to get down to the serious business of the world crumbling around us, because that's what's happening. And this is the crazy thing about the stories that I have found recently. And if you watch Off Limits, some of these might be familiar to you. But, you know, the meme clown world is like a very popular meme right now. And it's so accurate. It's such an appropriate thing to refer to the world as, because it's just what pops into your mind, because you almost have to have a sense of humor about this sort of stuff, because the absurdity of it is of such transcendental nature that it really is mind-blowing. So, of course, if you don't know, the meme of clown world is basically that everything is backwards, everything is wrong, everything is just as goofy as it could possibly be. And I've got a couple stories that display that just beyond the shadow of a doubt. So, for example, and I'm sure you've heard about this, but let's just take these two stories in conjunction, shall we? At the same time that the World Health Organization drops being transgender from its list of mental disorders, you have video game addiction being considered a mental disorder. So welcome to clown world. If you are convinced that reality is incorrect and you in fact are a male, but you just happen to be in a female's body and you want to cut your genitals off or undergo a comprehensive course of hormone replacement therapy or, you know, any other sort of, you know, body modification, that's fine. That's good. That's admirable, in fact, for you to do that. You're a brave, powerful human if you mutilate yourself. But if you play video games, if you like to get together with your friends and play some electronic sports, interact with your storytelling medium of choice, well, you have a problem, sir. You need to be medicated. That's wrong. So this is clown world, where being transgender is not a mental illness, but playing video games is. Who is running this thing? And is their hair rainbow? Are they clowns? Because that's literally what it seems like. And to me, this is very interesting, because it's being portrayed as this idea that being transgender is being dropped from the list of mental disorders. It's being portrayed as a positive thing for the transgender community. However, I have to question whether this will affect their ability to have things like their surgeries covered under insurance. If it's not a medical condition, then why should insurance pay for it? I guess it's an elective surgery then. And so I wonder if we're going to see transgender people actually advocating for it to be put back onto the list of mental disorders so they can have their insurance cover it. And again, I've gone through this before, but the history of transgenderism is just one of the most disturbing histories of all time. John Money, I believe his name was, Dr. Money, was the guy who was the first person to experiment with transgenderism. And listener warning, I'm about to say some disturbing things, but it's because it's the world that we live in. This was a while ago. I can't remember exactly when. I want to say the late 70s when John Money, Dr. John Money, got a pair of twin boys. One of them, unfortunately, had an accident during his circumcision, I believe, and his genitals were messed up. And so John Money swooped in and said, this is perfect. Twin study. We'll go ahead and remove the genitals completely. We'll turn this boy into a girl, and we'll raise him from the very beginning as a girl. Because he wanted to prove, John Money's, you know, idea was that if you just raise somebody as a girl, they are a girl, regardless of their biology. So he did this with these two twin boys, and I won't even get into some of the more disturbing aspects of this scientific study, which you can look into. Just don't do it on a full stomach, you know, you're going to, it's not good. Long story short, both the guy who he turned into a girl and raised as a girl eventually, you know, transitioned back, figured out what had been done to him, transitioned back to a man. Long story short, both the kids kill themselves. Both the kids who are a part of this study end up committing suicide. So that was the beginning of transgenderism. It's only gone up from there, folks. Don't worry about that. But it's just a very interesting transformation through the cultural lens and through the scientific lens of how this was able to be achieved, how this got into our culture. Now, remember, 5 years ago, I mean, how long ago was it that if you talked about transgenderism, if you talked about, you know, especially children changing their gender, I mean, that was unheard of just a few short years ago. And yet in these few short years, it's gone from something that was unheard of, unspoken of, considered clearly a mental disorder, to something that is so ubiquitous and unquestionable that you have people in the NHS in England working for, you know, government-owned hospitals that a few months ago were forced to quit their jobs in protest because they were being forced to participate in the surgeries and in the castration of children, the sexual mutilation of children. And so it wasn't even that they, you know, weren't allowed to protest against her. They had to participate in it. They had to help the people doing this. And some of these kids were foster care kids. So the doctors and the government employees are their only authority figures. So you put kids, you know, who have no parents, who have no family, put them in government control. The government educates them. The government informs them that they're transgender and then takes it upon themselves to castrate and chemically mutilate these children. And the people in the hospital that were working in the hospital that didn't agree with this had to quit their jobs. I mean, you know, put their entire careers at jeopardy. Thank God that they did. I mean, that's a brave thing. It's a very courageous thing to do, stand up for your convictions like that. But that's where we are now. So in just a few short years, it's gone from something that was unheard of to something that is mandatory for children, pretty much. And you have and the insanity that has spiraled out of all of this. Right. School has 17 children changing gender. So this is what they call rapid onset gender dysphoria. And basically what they're saying is that it is a contagion, is a social pathogen. It is something that people are convinced to. It's not something that naturally arises because you have friend groups where they all turn transgender all of a sudden. Now, this scientific study that identified rapid onset gender dysphoria was published, I believe, by Brown University's science publication, and they actually retracted it and apologized because it offended the transgender community. So scientific studies that don't comport with the already preconceived ideology of these insane people, the scientific process has to be shelved, has to be put to the side, has to be thrown away in favor of appeasing or pretending that reality fits within the false dichotomy, the false reality that certain people have erected around us. Totally insane, totally nonsensical. So welcome to Clown World. Being transgender is not a mental illness, but playing video games is. Honk honk indeed, my friends. When we get back to the other side, I will be breaking down the EU elections, the UK elections, all that good stuff. Stay with us, folks.
Infowars.com/show.
Donald J. Trump is president of the United States.
Trigger warning. This broadcast contains subject matter that might trigger liberal snowflakes. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer.
Harrison Smith sitting in for Owen Schroyer on this, the 29th of May, 2019. What you can expect for the rest of the show, about halfway through the first hour here, got 2.5 hours to sit with you. So what I'll be doing in that time is I'll be talking about the EU elections here in the latter half of this hour. And you're not going to want to miss, even if you don't care about Europe, even if you, you know, are an American and couldn't give a crap about Europe, you want to pay attention to this because this is about how big tech manipulates elections around the world. This is important stuff. So and about how the media influences violent behavior. It was all on display in the last few months for the European election. And I'll explain sort of what happened with Brexit, Nigel Farage, and all that in the next segment. But I'll talk about the EU. I'm going to talk about Pope Francis. I'm definitely going to be talking trash about Pope Francis in a little bit. Apologies to Catholics, but unfortunately, your sovereign makes a fool out of himself on a daily basis. So I'm going to mock him. Sorry. And all sorts of good stuff. But I'm not going to waste time telling you about it. I will waste time telling you to go to InfoWarsStore.com because if I don't, then I won't be here. I could just do this show and never plug, but that is an unsustainable business practice. So instead, I will implore you to go to InfoWarsStore.com and take advantage of the Memorial Day mega sale, up to 60% off all InfoWars Life products, or at least a large selection of the InfoWars Life products. And you can get an extra $10 off with the Real Red Pill and the Real Red Pill Red Pill Plus with the coupon code War Room. And if you do that, they know that the War Room sent you. And I don't know, maybe that's good for us. I'm not really sure how it works, but it can't be bad. So go to InfoWarsStore.com, get the Real Red Pill Plus or the Real Red Pill, enter coupon code War Room, get $10 off, and make my day. And in fact, this weekend we had a fantastic showing of InfoWarriors at the pro-life protest here in Austin, Texas at the Planned Parenthood. It's great meeting all of you. It was great hanging out with the InfoWarriors, connecting in real life where they can't censor us as, you know, despite the fact that they would want to, but it was really great. And one of the people that I met there said, you know, sometimes when Owen says like, go right now and order, you know, that's just what I do. So I'm just going to give it a try. Folks, if you're listening right now, right, do not wait. You have a phone. You can access the internet. Don't even exit this window. Just go to InfoWarsStore.com and buy Real Red Pill Plus right now. Okay, great. Thanks. Did that. All right. The EU elections were a resounding success for nationalists across the continent and really has the globalist shaking in their boots, the EU shaking in their boots. Of course, the EU is like a major, major stepping stone in the move towards a new world order, a global governance. The EU is like the bedrock that they're building that on. It was one of the main things that they're building that on. So it's crucial that they keep that up. They will do everything they can to keep that project going, despite its obvious failures and obvious hatred of it by a huge portion, at least, of the European people. But this AP News article puts it pretty well. It says, Macron versus Salvini, two leaders face off over the EU's future. France's pro-EU president and the leader of Italy's Eurosceptic far-right movement jockeyed for the role of chief power broker on the continent Monday after elections to the European Parliament hollowed out the traditional political middle. Now, this was not a fluke, as it were. This was not a accident, because as you see here, voters delivered the highest turnout in 20 years. And they rejected mainstream politics in France, Germany, Britain, and Italy. So this was not just, they won because nobody showed up. Highest voter turnout in 20 years. People are aware of what's going on. They're awake to this. They're politically active, and they're making a difference. They're putting people in charge that promise to curtail the power of the EU. In France, President Emmanuel Macron's party narrowly lost to the French far right led by Marine Le Pen. Macron, whose party was poised to secure 21 seats to 22 for Le Pen's national rally, spent Monday busily amassing allies ahead of a summit on Tuesday in Brussels, hoping to build a durable pro-EU coalition. But while they're building their pro-EU coalition, a much more powerful, popular, and logical coalition is being formed by Marine Le Pen, Hungary's hardline anti-immigrant Prime Minister Viktor Orban, of course, Matteo Salvini in Italy, and Brexit Party leader Nigel Farage. So that's the four, that's sort of the, it's not triumvirate. I should have looked up the word for it, quadumvirate. I'm not sure what you'd call it, but those are the four pillars of anti-EU, pro-nationalist, pro-populist people in Europe. But here's the very interesting thing, and it's specifically about Matteo Salvini. So you have Matteo Salvini about 2 weeks ago declaring war on NGOs. They will fine boats for rescuing immigrants. So they're going to fine the, billion-dollar funded, you know, these NGOs, these non-governmental organizations are funded by billions of dollars or millions and millions and millions of dollars to go and ferry Africans to and from Italy, or no, not from, sorry, to Italy. They go pick up Africans and they bring them to Italy and they drop them off. This is all done at the behest of and funded by billionaires like George Soros. And so here the story says that Italy's government is planning to issue a decree that would mean NGO rescue boats, right? That's what they call them, would be fined up to 5,500 euros for each migrant they disembark on Italian soil. Now, in this article from InfoWars, we include a segment from a leading thinker of this in Italy, and she says, all these international NGOs such as Avaaz, Oxfam, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and many others have certainly one thing in common, their financial source, which is Soros. So this is the name of some of the NGOs that are being targeted by this Italian decree by Salvini in an attempt to curb the flow of migrants. Now, what's so interesting about that? Because then comes along this story. Facebook gags Italian populace 2 weeks before the EU elections. Facebook has banned 23 major Italian pro-populist pages with a combined 2.5 million followers 2 weeks before the European elections. So this is about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks before the elections. Facebook just blatantly, openly, without reservation, just meddling in foreign politics, just absolutely wielding their power of censorship to destroy populist and nationalist leaders. But here, again, it's a very interesting thing. Facebook claims that the sites were spreading fake news, quote, hate speech and divisive content about immigrants, vaccines, and Jews, after left-wing human rights and environmentalist non-government organization Avaaz issued a report on inauthentic behavior over Italian Facebook messages. Avaaz, do you recognize that name? Perhaps from nigh on a minute ago, when I said that this would be one of the NGOs that's targeted by Matteo Salvini. So here's what happens. Matteo Salvini comes in promising to restrict or, curtail illegal immigration into Italy. He does this in part by issuing a decree that would levy fines on the NGOs per migrant they bring in. They will be charged and this will, bankrupt them if they insist on continuing to bring in Africans. One of these NGOs that is targeted that would be a subject of these fines is the NGO called Avaaz, A-V-A-A-Z. Avaaz then goes to Facebook and says Matteo Salvini is spreading fake news and lies on your platform. So Facebook turns around and deletes the pages that support Matteo Salvini. This is the coordination. This is the collusion. This is how NGOs destroy their political opponents in conjunction with big tech, who operates with absolute immunity, absolute, self-confidence in the fact that there will be nothing, nothing will be done to them. Nothing will happen as a result of their completely unfair and biased banning of populist movements off their platform. This is the coordination. This is the collusion. This is how it happens. This is how the NGOs exert their will, exert their influence over big tech to destroy the politicians who are attempting to stand up for their own people against the NGOs who are trying to destroy them. Is it all coming together? Are the lines starting to connect? They're all in it together. They have a plan. They do it openly. And it's time to fight back, folks. Stay with us.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
All right, folks, the UK election, the elections held in the UK for the EU Parliament happened last week, were a very interesting circus to watch, in my opinion. I enjoy watching and learning about the British system, political system. It's very interesting in a lot of ways. It's very convoluted, cacophonous in a lot of ways. It's good in some ways, bad in some ways. But this particular election cycle was highly entertaining and highly interesting for a number of reasons. And the thing was that Brexit, I'll give you a little timeline, all right, of exactly what happened. In case you're unfamiliar with Brexit, in case you're new to this, I'll break it all down for you very quickly. Nigel Farage, leader of the UKIP party, was in EU Parliament for about 17 years. And for the entire time that he was there, he advocated for Britain leaving the EU. They told him it could never happen. He was leader of UKIP from 2009 to 2016. On June 23rd, 2016, I believe it was, he finally got what he wanted. They held a referendum called Brexit, Britain to leave the EU and invoke Article 50, which said that they were allowed to leave the EU, because before they entered the EU, they said we have to have a valve. We have to have a way to get out if we eventually want to. We can't be stuck in this. That portion of the agreement was called Article 50. They activated it, or whatever you'd want to call it, call that. But June 23rd, 2016, it passes 51.9% of the vote for Brexit. It succeeds. They invoke Article 50. Now, Nigel Farage at that point retires from being an MEP, member of European Parliament. Although he's still in UKIP, he's no longer the leader of UKIP. UKIP experiences a drastic decline. It goes through a lot of leadership changes over the next couple of years and really loses its power, because it was pretty much primarily focused on getting the referendum, getting out of the EU. Now, the thing was that one of the stipulations of Brexit was that it would happen by March 29th of this year, of 2019, which would mean that Britain should not have voted in this EU election. They should be out by now. They should have left on the 29th of May. That obviously didn't happen. Why didn't that happen? Because basically, as soon as Brexit happened, you had David Cameron that day, actually before the results were even in, he had announced his resignation, because he said he would. He said, if the referendum passes, then I will resign. So that's what he did the day it happened. So he resigns. Theresa May becomes leader of the Conservative Party. She kisses the feet of the Queen. The Queen says, "You are now Prime Minister." Literally, that's how Britain works, because it's crazy. So the Queen makes Theresa May the leader. Now, Theresa May was a Remainer. She wanted to stay in the EU. She did not. She actually campaigned for Remain, not for Brexit. But she promised to deliver Brexit if she was made Prime Minister, and she was. However, later there was actually leaked audio of Theresa May giving a speech to Goldman Sachs bankers, where she pretty much, you know, lets it slip that she's not really working for Brexit. She's going to make sure that the bankers get what they want out of whatever deal comes out of it. Because they have to make a deal, obviously, if they're leaving the EU. They can't just, you know, cut the lines and you know, peace out. They have to, you know, figure out how free trade is going to work and all this sort of stuff. But here's the thing. The sort of unspoken or underlying cause, and of course, this was spoken about by the left quite a bit, saying the only reason you want Brexit is because you're racist. You dirty racist, you want Brexit because you just are racist, and that's the end of that. And to be honest, that is a big part of it, because right now the immigrant problem in Britain is so huge and is such paramount importance to British nationalists, and they don't set their own immigration policy. The EU sets it for them. So for them to reform their immigration policy and put a stop to the millions and millions of immigrants coming into Britain, they had to leave the EU. So that was a huge, huge force behind Brexit, was the immigration factor, because they wanted to get out of the EU so they could set their own terms and stop taking immigrants. So that was a big factor of it. So after Nigel Farage left UKIP, his job done, whoop, whoop, we're done, goes through a lot of changes and eventually lands on Gerard Batten in April of last year. He became leader of UKIP, and he was sort of the first person to actually maintain leadership for a while. He's still leader today. And his sort of tactic to revitalize UKIP was to bring on people like Tommy Robinson, who is, of course, an outspoken anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant, anti-Islam spokesperson, demonized by the British establishment, et cetera, et cetera. You know all about it. I actually went to Britain to cover the arrest of Tommy Robinson when he was arrested for reporting on the rape gang epidemic. Met Gerard Batten. He was very, very pleasant, very nice guy. And in fact, I sort of messed up. My equipment messed up, but it's my fault. And we actually had to redo the interview with Gerard Batten. He was totally accommodating for us. So very nice guy, very well spoken. I got what he was doing, and I understood what the sort of tactic was, because he was sort of just pulling the pulling the sheet back and going, look, this Brexit was about immigration. That's really what the core issue was. So that's what we need to focus on and talk about. Here's the thing, though. The British public is very fickle. Not fickle, but very, like, proper. Like, they really, you know, the fact that Tommy Robinson had been arrested is like, well, he's a criminal. That's just that, and we will have nothing to do with him. That's really how a lot of the British public thinks about things and reacts. And in some ways, it's good because you get really good, like, the quality of their newscasts. Even though they're just as, if not more biased than the American side, they tend to have a higher standard for their broadcasting, just better in general. And so there are aspects to it that are good where, you know, this politeness, this constant sort of maintaining uprightness is good in some ways. But in other ways, like with Tommy Robinson, the British people, they're not going to be okay with you if you have been smeared in the media as a racist or a criminal. They're just not going to be okay with that. So that happened. And then along with this, Gerard Batten brought on Sargon of Akkad, Count Dankula, and in fact, Paul Joseph Watson joined UKIP as well at the same time. But Count Dankula and Sargon of Akkad, a.k.a. Carl Benjamin, joined UKIP and ran for members of parliament. Now, it didn't go well. Let's just say it didn't go well. But I cannot put the fault on Gerard Batten or Sargon of Akkad or any of these people because the fact is the UKIP had already sort of collapsed. You know, this was an attempt to rebuild UKIP. It's not like it was starting off in a great place and then it collapsed because he did this. It was already pretty broken, pretty disseminated. Like it wasn't really a powerful party. This was an attempt to get the young people to come in, to align it with free speech activism that goes on the internet. It was a good move, in my opinion, although the way it was handled was not good. But this all happened around a year ago, around last summer, is when Gerard Batten started bringing all these people in. And Nigel Farage, who was still a member of UKIP but was not a leader of UKIP, disagreed with this and didn't think this was a good idea. However, you know, Gerard Batten had steadied the ship, right? The UK had been rocking, had been stumbling, had been in uncertain hands. Well, Gerard Batten sort of righted the ship and steadied everything and had this plan to look, we're gonna make a splash. We're going to bring on these, you know, controversial kind of people, but it'll help us get our message out, blah, blah, blah. Nigel Farage disagreed with this, but he'd already left the party and he'd sort of left the party in a lurch. So you can't blame, you know, Batten for not just being like, oh, okay, we'll just do what you say. I mean, you abandoned the party. It sort of fell apart. And now you're going to come back in and tell us, you know, what to do. And you know, that's not really how it works. They've been planning this. So Nigel Farage decided that it was best to create his own party. He called it the Brexit Party. And that really swept all the elections because Nigel Farage really keeps his hands clean of the immigration stuff. He focuses on the economic issues at play with Brexit. And he's just so well known. He's very charismatic. You know, it was sort of a one man party, but a lot of people went over there. But throughout all of this, you have Sargon of Akkad being asked this question about a joke he had made like 6 years ago, where he told a Labour MP, "I wouldn't even rape you," because she basically was just a feminist, like anti-male, like she would just like laugh at the idea that the government should do something about the number one killer of young men in Britain being suicide. And she's just like, "I find it laughable that you would want to have that that discussion." So she engendered a lot of ill feeling towards her. And then she would play the victim by saying, "Oh, I'm a rape survivor and all this criticism is triggering me. And you know, so we need to arrest these people," or whatever it was, basically playing the victim card in order to try to get out of, you know, correct criticism for her bad attitude. And so Sargon of Akkad tweeted this, which, you know, yeah, it's a little far. It's a little on the nose, if you will. But what happened was this became the 100%, like this is all they talked about. Anytime anybody from UKIP got interviewed, that's what they talked about, was the rape comments. And they didn't handle it well. I'll tell you how they should have handled it. It's quite simple. Anytime they brought up the rape comments, all they had to say was, "Don't tell me the media cares about rape. You covered up Rotherham. We have the documents. You covered it up. You allowed the rape gangs to happen. So don't come to me talking about rape." They would have stopped asking that question immediately. Fortunately, they didn't do that. More on the other side.
The War Room. InfoWars.com/show. The fight for the future is now. This is The War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
Harrison Smith sitting in for Owen Schroyer today. I'm going to try to finish up with the EU elections in the UK in this short five-minute segment that we have here at the top of the second hour of The War Room. So here's why I think it's important to look at the UK election, look at what happened, and learn sort of from the mistakes, because it was a unique situation. If Nigel Farage had not created the Brexit Party, I think it would have been a different dichotomy. We would have seen a different outcome. But as he did, he drew a lot of votes away from UKIP. But what UKIP was doing was really visionary. Even if it didn't work out, what they're doing is visionary, because what they did was bring in internet celebrities who are basically untouchable in terms of the mainstream media or the mainstream culture at large, right? They're just absolutely demonized by the mainstream press and the media, you know, much in the way InfoWars was. And so he brings on Tommy Robinson, Sargon of Akkad, and Count Dankula, which to me is the future of politics. I look forward to a future where we are represented by people who are content creators, who have direct interactions with their fans, who, you know, get on social media and say exactly what they think and ask questions to their constituents and respond. I think that's actually a very healthy development for democracy or representative republicanism, because I think I think it's good. I think that these, you know, we have Joey Salads running for is he running for Congress in New York, I believe, big YouTuber. You know, they have an audience. They have attention. Now, I think the influence that they exert was maybe a little bit overestimated by Batten and UKIP, because, you know, obviously that worldwide audience doesn't quite translate into localities in the UK. And they were also made the concerted, you know, the target of a concerted effort by the media to denigrate and slander them. Unfortunately, they sort of gave them the ammo. And like I said in the last time, they could have just they just sort of game planned a little bit. They were going for, I mean, Sargon specifically said, you know, basically Donald Trump doesn't apologize. I'm not going to apologize. I'm going to play the Donald Trump playbook and see how it goes. But here's the thing. Donald Trump does apologize. He gave a very sincere apology after the tapes came out, after the Access Hollywood tapes came out. He gave a very sincere apology. There are times to apologize and there are times not to apologize. There are times to be bullheaded and there are times not to be bullheaded. And I think you can't just treat every problem like it's a nail, even though your hammer is in perfect working order. That's not how it goes. So it's not good because it didn't. It obviously didn't work. And from the beginning, they sort of knew it wasn't going to work. They knew Nigel Farage had created this new party, and probably most of the votes were going there. So, you know, even in the campaign, you had Sargon basically saying, oh, "Well, we're not going to, you know, I'm not going to win, but this is fun to do it or whatever." But I don't want this to be something that turns people off of YouTubers or internet celebrities running for office, because I actually do think that that is a good thing. And I think that that is the future, and I'm running for president now. But that's what happens. And then at the same time, and just to finish off this this discussion about the EU and the UK, is you had this phenomenon of milkshaking. I guess it started with some guy who threw a milkshake at, I can't remember, I think it was Nigel Farage, or it may have been Sargon, but both of these guys, just they couldn't go anywhere without people throwing milkshakes at them or fish at them. Sargon got fish thrown at him, like dead fish, and just very weird stuff. But then you have all of the you have Burger King coming out and saying, oh, just reminding you, we're selling milkshakes, hint hint, nod nod, wink wink. So you have the corporatocracy advocating political violence. But then you have places like the New Statesman saying, no, throwing milkshake at someone is not an act of political violence. And now today you have Vice coming out with an article saying how to make the perfect milkshake for throwing at fascists. So welcome to clown world, folks. Speech is violence, but assaulting people is not. That's where we are now. That's the reality that the leftists live in. And try as we might to yank them out of that false reality and into the real world, we just get milkshakes thrown at us. So yet another acceleration, yet another move towards violence. Well done, leftists. Well done.
Yeah.
folks. Welcome. Second hour of the War Room has begun. Thank you so much for being here with us. Harrison Smith sitting in for Owen Schroyer on this, the 29th of May, 2019. I'm done talking about the EU elections, but I'm not done talking about the EU in total because I want to go to this video very quickly of John Cleese. I guess this is from a few years ago, but he brought this back up. He said recently he tweeted out, you know, a few years ago, I mentioned that London was no longer an English city, and now I have a lot of people, you know, foreigners telling me that I'm right, telling me that I was right then, or at least, you know, I shouldn't have been lambasted as I was back then. So let's go to this video. This is from a few years ago. This is John Cleese, clip 16, guys, saying London no longer feels English.
I think you did had a great eye for British culture. What do you make of British culture now, particularly after the riots that we've seen?
I'm not sure what's going on in Britain. Let me say this. I don't know what's going on in London, because London is no longer an English city, and that's how they got the Olympics. I mean, they said we're the most cosmopolitan city on Earth, but it doesn't feel English. I had a Californian friend come over 2 months ago, walked down the King's Road and said to me, well, where are all the English people? And I mean, I love having different cultures around, but when the parent culture kind of dissipates, you're left thinking, well, what's going on?
So, he starts off there by saying, I don't know what's happening. Would you like me to fill you in, Mr. Cleese? Would you like me to tell you about replacement migration? Would you like to hear about Agenda 2030? Do you know that this is not an accident, that this is not something that needs to be baffling or incomprehensible? It's quite simple. There is an active, ongoing plan to replace the European people with immigrants, and it is because they want to create an underclass, basically, of people who have no history and no culture of freedom. They want to bring in people who adhere to a religion whose name is submission. Because the English people have a powerful history and a powerful internal drive for independence and individuality. And they must be done away with in order to usher in global governance. Oh, and there's a fantastic new video by Paul Joseph Watson about this, and maybe I'll play this in just a minute. But before I do, I want to go to this next video. This is clip 18. This is old London. This is what London used to look like, and I will narrate for radio viewers. Let's play this B-roll now. Here we see a street, several racists walking around. Here we see a racist lady in a red coat. That's a racist car. You see lots of white people. I know it's disgusting, but that was a black guy. I saw a black guy. There's another one. I see another. So two black people I've seen in this whole video. He's a racist. All these people are racists. It's nothing but white people. It's absolutely disgusting. There's no diversity whatsoever. Obviously, they're struggling to get along. I mean, they're hardly surviving. They don't have the diversity that truly creates their strength. That's a black woman. Okay, I don't know how she got in there, but this was Britain back in the day. It's just horrible. You can see why the globalists they have to destroy this. They have to bring in millions of Pakistanis, because this, I mean, what you're seeing here is unsustainable. That woman needs a hijab on. So does she. That guy's a racist. All right, so this was old London in the 60s and 70s. I know, it's hard to watch, folks. Hard to watch all those white people living in the country of their ancestors. Now let's watch clip 19. This is London today. Let's see. It's probably gotten better, right? It's a lot better. Let's go to clip 19. Oh, this is much better. This is much better. All right. No white people whatsoever. Thank God. Finally, we got rid of all those white people. Going from store to store. Not a native face to be found. An aboriginal. Was there a white guy? He's lost. He's trying to find the subway to get out of there. It's a woman wearing a full burqa. That's the full thing. I think she has black gloves on. Because God knows if you see a woman's hand, that's it's a sin. There's London today. So my question is, why are you so confused that John Cleese would bring this up? I mean, have you not eyes to see? Can you not just see that this is happening? And when I went to England to cover the Tommy Robinson thing, I walked through neighborhoods like this where it was just Somalia. It was just, I mean, literally no woman had, was there without a hijab on. It literally was not England. It wasn't England. That's racist. Yeah. Yeah. And racist. But, I don't know. I cover this all the time, and I cover it on Off Limits. So if you watch me on Off Limits, you're just going to hear it again. But, and I've said it here before on this show. I guess this position is just radical now. This is just unheard of. I'm taking a position that is shocking to most people. But here it is. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I'm going to put myself out on the line and just come out and say it. I'm against genocide. I know. But here's the catch. I don't care who it is. I just don't like cultures and people being forcibly displaced. I know. I'm a racist. I guess that makes me a white supremacist because I don't like when foreign people displace local people when the local people don't want them to. I think that's wrong. And I know it's an extremist position. Now, if you ask a liberal whether colonialism is good or bad, they're going to be very quick to tell you how bad it is. And guess what? I agree with them. I actually agree with them. I am heartbroken about what happened to the Native Americans. Like, I wish there were more of them. I wish they were around. I wish things had gone better. You know, I don't like what happened. Okay? But if you went back in time and were in this, in the world of, you know, colonial America in the 1700s, would you have been against colonialism? I don't know. But I was against it back then, and guess what? I'm against it now. Whether it's happening to white people or brown people or black people, I'm against it. And that makes me an extremist racist, I suppose. But that's what's actually happening, literally. I mean, Macron recently said that he wanted to bring 200 million Africans into France. Ireland 2030 is bringing 1 million migrants into Ireland, who I believe has a population of around 4 million. That seems low, but I think it's something like that. So a quarter of the population will now be migrants. And people have been posting tons of pictures of elementary schools from Ireland where there's literally like one white girl and everybody else is African or Arab. And it's just like, why is this okay? Why is this any different than European countries going into African countries or American countries, South America, whatever, and displacing them? What is different about it? The only difference is instead of a sort of more advanced, more powerful country going in and exerting their force against a smaller, weaker, less developed country and ruling over them and exploiting them, that's colonialism. Everybody recognizes that's bad. Instead, what you have are the elites and the rulers of the advanced first world country undermining, circumventing, doing this without the permission of the people that they are supposed to be representing in their government. But these elites are going out and getting people from the less advanced, from the, you know, less developed countries and bringing them into their own country. It's a reverse colonialism, but the effect is the same. The displacement of the native people, the destruction of the native culture, and very nice, folks, is that's exactly what happens. It's the slow, inevitable replacement of native people in their own countries with their own unique, beautiful cultures all being amalgamated together into one vaguely just empty culture that is defined strictly by what? By materialism? By what they buy? By what TV shows they watch? They want to strip humans down. They want to remove any cultural or historical baggage we may have and replace it with consumerism and materialism and endless dopamine fixations.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
folks. I'm just perusing the news here, trying to figure out if there's any new information about this guy who lit himself on fire near the White House today. Very strange, but as far as I can tell, there's no new information on him. He set himself on fire just after noon today at 15th and Constitution. Really chilling footage and chilling photos from this. Really just kind of freaky. He's just walking around. We have the video there playing. I mean, very, 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 very strange. And a lot of things like this have happened recently. There's somebody else who did this just a little while ago, but we'll keep monitoring this and tell you if this was some sort of political movement. I mean, it seems like it is, but hard to say. Just a very, very strange thing to see. So I will be taking your calls later in this hour and into the third hour about any topics you'd like to discuss. No particular topic. 1-888-201-2244. That is 1-888-201-2244. Lines are open for the War Room. All right, where do I go here? Man, I could honestly keep going about the EU elections, but I won't. But man, there's so much interesting stuff that went on, especially with the social media censorship and manipulation during it. But this is just real quickly. This is just an interesting number that just over 1,000 migrants have entered Italy across the Mediterranean Sea this year. Last year, there were 23,000 arrivals, significantly fewer than the previous years when there were more than 100,000 migrants entered the country annually. So this is one of those things where, people act like I'm naive for wanting to be involved politically, for understanding that we can actually make a difference if we get the right people into office. Literally, people just think like there's no chance, it's all controlled, I don't know what their plan is. I don't know what they're planning, but I understand that as corrupt as these institutions have become, we can take control of it. We can take them back. We can make changes. So Matteo Salvini gets into office in Italy, starts making moves against the immigrants, and it falls from 100,000 a year to 23,000 a year to we're almost halfway through the year and there's only been 1,000. So that's a huge difference. That's a major step forward. From 100,000 to 1,000 or 100,000 to 2,000, that is amazing. 1,000 is still too many if you ask me, but that's what can happen when you get involved politically, when somebody can stand up against the establishment, against the power structure, and be effective, like Matteo Salvini is being. So from 100,000 migrants a year, when they were just doing nothing, just like, whatever, oops, to Matteo Salvini just being like, hey, let's just stop them from doing this. Like, that's literally how easy it is. It's like, you know, we are the government. You know, we have a navy. Like, you could just blow those boats out of the water. Like, you just can. You can just do that. It really is just as easy as just deciding to do it. You just have to get the right people in office. So, all right. I'll stop talking about Europe. Gosh darn it. Kind of. I'm still going to talk about Pope Francis. Pope Francis. What a guy. Pope Francis says discrimination against migrants is an alarm bell warning of the world's moral decline. Is it, though? Is it, though? Like, this guy, the leader of the Christians, as far as, you know, mainstream media or anybody's concerned, you know, head of the Catholic Church, sovereign of one of the most powerful institutions of all time, the Catholic Church, is doing nothing to protect Christians whatsoever, nothing to protect his own flock. Instead, he is condemning them and literally kissing the feet of migrants and inviting them in and telling you you're sinful if you don't allow your Christian culture to be overcome by Muslim culture. I mean, this guy's insane. But he's the infallible voice of God on the earth. So, you know, who am I? Who am I to say? But it's funny because you have cardinals coming out and you have one U.S. cardinal saying Islam is attempting to take over the West. and warning this. You have another, I believe, African cardinal who, I guess because he's African, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't feel the need to demonize white people in the way that white people have been trained to do. So he comes out and is like, hey, let's not let Muslims take over and destroy this Christian heritage. Let's not do like, let's not let that happen. He's like, I think Europe is beautiful and I think it should stay Europe. There's the U.S. cardinal. There's an African cardinal as well that did it. So Pope Francis is like, they're just ushering in the destruction, just lording over the dystopian hellhole that Europe is quickly becoming. And his underlings are like breaking with the Pope to say, no, this is wrong. This is bad. Like they are supposed to be the protectors of the religion. But in the same way that our politicians feel no need to protect us, I guess the Catholic clergy feels no need to protect Catholics or Christians. But then you have, and it's like, it's not even funny, but you have, you know, stories from just this week. Iraq's Christians are close to extinction. There was another headline that was a study of religious persecution, and it found that one third of the people in the world are religiously persecuted, and the majority of those are Christians. And Christians are by far the most persecuted group in the world. And they are, the way this study and this article put it, at or near genocide levels. Genocide levels. So, and I've talked about this on Off Limits, so I'm not going to, continue on it here, but Christianity is really in crisis right now. And you literally have the Pope just advocating for their destruction. And you also have Pope Francis, and this is just amazing. Here's a quote. Here's a quote from him during a interview with a Mexican outlet. He says, I do not know what's going on with this new culture that defends territories by building a wall. That's new, apparently. Apparently defending territories with a wall is like brand new. He's like, I'm not sure about this new technology. The wall? I don't know. It just looks like a vertical floor to me. It's like, it's so ridiculous. He says, we've already dealt with one, the one in Berlin, which brought us enough headaches and enough suffering. Okay, dear Pope Francis, dear God's infallible avatar on earth, let me explain something to you. The Berlin Wall was to keep people in. The border wall is to keep people out. There's a big difference, okay? Nobody's trying to escape America. Nobody is risking life and limb, risking sniper towers and barbed wire to escape America in the way that they were trying to escape the communist hellhole of East Berlin. So it's just like, I mean, this guy's the Pope and I got to explain this stuff to him. It's ridiculous. And folks, you know, the only reason the Berlin Wall worked is because they didn't have ladders yet. I mean, we know from the liberals that ladders defeat walls, so... You know, the Berlin Wall, it was only able to work because the technology for ladders had not been invented yet. So, Pope Francis questioning the effectiveness of this brand new technology, called a wall.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show. This broadcast contains subject matter that may offend liberal snowflakes. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer. Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to The War Room, halfway through this May 29th, 2019 edition of The War Room. One thing that I have missed out on by hosting the live stream show, which I host on, you can find on the InfoWars homepage every day, 7 p.m., every weekday, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, although I typically go over. I've been doing two-hour shows, but I can because it's just it's a live stream show. I don't have these dedicated in-and-out points like I do with the radio and television broadcast, but one of the things I've missed most is being able to take calls and talk to people because we're doing live stream, because it's a one-man show when I do it, meaning I'm running the switcher and everything. I don't have it set up, and I can't handle taking calls. So I'm very excited to take your calls. I'm very excited to talk to you because I have missed the discussion. And so I'll be going to your calls in just a minute. But before I do, I wanted to just talk a little bit more. We talked about how Pope Francis, you know, he thinks walls are racist, and he just is totally fine with Christianity basically coming to an end in his lifetime. And he's not like he's the Pope or anything. But we'll stick on immigration for just a moment, because the story we have today is feds transferred over 230 undocumented immigrants detained near Mexico to NYC area jails, New York City area jails. So undocumented immigrants caught at the Mexico border, shipped thousands of miles to jail in New York City. This comes on the heels of this story yesterday. DHS says 100% of border crossers with kids are being released into the U.S. 100% are, and not only that, they're given work permits. So literally, if you just cross the border with a kid, you don't even have to be applying for asylum. You don't even have to say, oh, I'm being persecuted. You can just be like, no, I'm just breaking the law. I'm just here because I want to be. And I just decided to wander across without permission. And the United States government says, oh, you come on in, go thousands of miles into the country, and here's a job. And then they say, why don't you come back in 2 years, and then we'll deport you. People are like, yeah, right, sure, I'll do that. So meanwhile, by the way, 85% of these people don't return, because why would they? Because, like, how stupid are we that we literally just bus in immigrants and give them jobs and then are like, and please come back so we can deport you in 2 years, please? And then, of course, we have, you know, all these NGOs with just millions of dollars, just billionaires emptying their pockets to fund lawyers to advocate on the behalf of the migrants. 2 years. So that 2 years is not a, it's not a grace period. That's the backlog. 2 years worth of lawyers, 2 years worth of judges, 2 years worth of opposing lawyers, 2 years worth of jail time, 2 years worth of judges, courts, juries, police, 2 years. Just tens of thousands of dollars just taken from the taxpayer, from the American taxpayer, and just fed into this machine that's run by people like that, George Soros, who's partnering with MasterCard to hand out money to migrants. And then they fund lawyers who tell the migrants what to say to achieve asylum, how to cheat our system. And then when they get caught, the NGOs are there to fund free lawyers to defend the migrants, to break our laws, to just gum up the works. Just millions of dollars we're just pouring into this system. Why? Why are we doing this? Absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely insane. Our immigration policy is absolutely outrageous. But there you go. 100% of border crossers with children not only get into the country, they're given work permits, according to the DHS. So our government is not here to defend us. Our government is not here to work with us. The government is not here to defend the borders or maintain law and order. Apparently, the government is just here to undermine and replace us. That is the new world order in which we find ourselves. And of course, today, transferring 230 undocumented immigrants to New York City area jails. Totally crazy. Here's what I think we should do. Crazy idea. It's totally crazy. And I know earlier in the show I was advocating against colonialism. But can we just colonize Mexico? Is that too far? Did I go too far when I said that? I'm supposed to calm down. No, but what if we had immigration processing centers in Mexico? What if we just, instead of taking them to New York, what if we just deported them first and then had the trials and then all had that? I'm just trying to think outside the box, because obviously our current system is insane, is absolutely insane. All right, let's not colonize Mexico. All right, that was too far. Although I have heard that Donald Trump is either thinking about or perhaps already has declared the Mexican cartels a terrorist organization. Now, I've done the math. If we were to take all the soldiers currently in the Middle East and bring them to the southern border, it averages out to about one soldier every 200 feet. That's my plan. We don't need a wall. We need every soldier from the Middle East to come home and just stand 200 yards away from each other on the border. That's my plan. Harrison for president. All right, let's go out to the phone calls. Tim from Washington has been holding for a little while. Tim, you are on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Harrison. I was just wondering, has Brad Chadford ever talked to you about the Georgia Guidestones? Has any leftist ever mentioned it to you?
About the Georgia Guidestones? I do not recall. I'll have to plead the fifth on this. I don't think so. Why do you ask?
Well, it's the big plant. I mean, they're depopulating. They're basically genociding every aspect of America, and it's in Georgia, and it tells everybody what's going on. And it seems as it's really hard to get through, like all of the minutiae of distraction and, you know, the Trump Russia thing. But when it comes right down to it, people are still being depopulated left and right, and there's chemtrails over my home right now.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so the funniest thing to me ever, and the crew can probably pull this up just because you mentioned chemtrails, and I just want to talk about this. If you right now look up on YouTube, there's a video of John Brennan giving a speech where he is talking about strategic aerosol injections in the atmosphere, stratospheric aerosol injections, which are chemtrails, right? And he's talking about how this is a great way to manipulate weather. And then there underneath the YouTube video is the little YouTube conspiracy warning saying contrails are made by the exhaust of airplanes and chemtrails is just conspiracy. So there under the video of John Brennan telling you that there are chemtrails is YouTube telling you there aren't. I just think that is a hilarious sort of irony. But Tim, you are exactly right. And this is something that there it is right there. He's talking to the Council of Foreign Relations of all people, of all groups. But no, Tim is dead on the money. He's hit the nail on the head. And you're right. We should bring up things like Georgia Guidestones because so much of this stuff is occult. And that's sort of one thing that's just out in the open. And you can just point to that and go there. That's where they tell us what they're doing. Because people finally, you know, after so many years of InfoWars and Alex Jones trying to batter the door down, finally it's finally coming out. And finally the mainstream media is starting to look a little bit like InfoWars did 5 or 10 years ago, where they're talking about some of this stuff. And yet they don't make the connections. They don't connect the dots that they notice. And so it's easy for them to just be sort of baffled and be like, well, why would they do this if that's a bad, and why? And then they do this too. That's kind of weird. And it's like InfoWars is still the only one telling you this is all a plan. This is all on purpose. These people get together and talk about how to do this, and then they enact their plans. This isn't, you know, this stuff isn't random. You know, these decisions being made, or the fact that Roundup causes cancer. You think they didn't know that? You think that was oopsies, glyphosate causes cancer. Oops, we made a black ops team to discredit and eliminate people who question us. Oopsies. No, they know it's happening. They try to silence people who are warning everybody. They know exactly what they're doing. You find all of this strange, sort of inexplicable stuff all goes in exactly the same direction. We've been telling you about it for years. We're still telling you about it now. Even though the mainstream media is finally catching up to some of the stuff we talk about, they still refuse to draw the lines. They still refuse to make the connections. And Tim from Washington's exactly right. The Georgia Guidestones ties it all together and explains it all.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Here's the problem. I have too many stories, and I lost the story I was going to tell you about, but luckily, my memory's a steel trap, and I will tell it to you as best I remember it. But just this idea of clown world, as I was explaining earlier, just the absurd, not just wrong, but like backwards, like actively just the opposite of reality. So this story was talking about how basically all Jewish locations in Germany now have to have a permanent police presence. Synagogues, Jewish schools, they all have to be protected by police 24/7. This is Merkel, Chancellor of Germany, coming out and saying that this has to be done. And she brings this up. Get this. She brings this up in a discussion about the rise of and the increasing power of things like Alternative for Germany, AfD, which are right-wing, anti-immigrant parties in Germany. And she brings up the fact that, you know, Jews now have to be protected by police in Germany as sort of a consequence of the rise of the AfD or this, you know, nativist populist group. But hopefully, if you have some context, if you understand what's going on, you understand how utterly backwards that is. I don't even know if I can express it. Anybody who's paying attention knows that the increase of anti-Semitism in Europe is almost entirely due to the influx of Muslim migrants. Everybody knows this. I mean, these people come from Syria. They have often, you know, intrinsic distrust or hate for Israel and the Jews, and they commit acts of anti-Semitism or acts of violence against Jews when they're brought into Europe and brought into close contact with them. So think about that for a second. Immigrants come in, make it dangerous for Jews to be there. Then Merkel blames the anti-Semitism on the political parties that want to decrease immigration, which is the cause of the anti-Semitism. So the people who are offering a solution to the problem are in fact being blamed for the problem. This is how insane the world is nowadays. The anti-immigrant groups that want less Muslim migration, which is the cause, mostly is the cause of the anti-Semitism, are being blamed for the anti-Semitism that they're trying to stop. I mean, this is clown world. This is the insanity. Merkel insists Islam is part. Wait, go back. I haven't seen that headline. Merkel insists Islam is part of Germany in the first speech of her new term. Yeah. Well, it is now. Thanks, Merkel. Thanks. My God. All right. Let's go back out to the phone calls. Let's go to. You just called in. So let's go to Frank in Illinois. Frank wants to talk about censorship. Oh, and white power symbols. Yeah. Is this about Sweden? Sweden recently passed a law, or I don't know if they passed it, but there were discussions of banning Viking runes because the symbols were appropriated by neo-Nazi groups. So literally destroying their own culture and their own history. It's literally the symbols, the alphabet of their ancestors are being destroyed to appease PC culture. Is that what you're talking about, Frank, from Illinois?
I'm actually not aware of that story yet, but I was actually referencing the story that happened at the Cubs game where some guy was ignorant, was flashing that symbol that wasn't even an example of white power, but based on I can't remember what it was, but if it was a 4chan or Reddit troll who made it into a white national thing. But what I don't understand is that, how is this happening now? I mean, I don't know if you follow pro wrestling or not. I know maybe Owen Troyer does because he does a lot of WWE themes during on and off going, cutting back to the show thing. But John Cena has used that for years. That's like one of his trademark hand gestures. He has it all on his merchandise. I have his wristbands where he's done it too. No one said anything, and I don't want it to be, but like, how come no one's spoken out against that?
Oh, no. It's literally the most, like, one of the most common hand signals for all of time. It's been used forever. It's so crazy that it was a 4chan prank, basically. And the idea is that they said, we're going to trick white power. We're going to trick the media into thinking that the OK symbol is actually a W and a P for white power, and that this is a white power symbol, and they fall for it. And they even know that they're falling for it, and yet they fall for it regardless. And in fact, this happened again just this week. I mean, it happened instantly. I saw the thread on 4chan, and then like the next day, the articles were there where they made the hashtag a fascist symbol. They talk about how they call it the hashtag. And it was just another thing where they're like, hey guys, the media are fear-mongering idiots. Let's convince them that yet another totally, you know, inoffensive symbol is in reality racist. And so instantly you had articles saying the hashtag is now racist. The number symbol has been co-opted, and we hereby surrender the hashtag to the white power people. It's just fear-mongering from the media who just have to, they really want to convince people that everybody's racist. And then the people that sort of are in on it or just sort of laughing at the media, they all start doing it just to troll them, just because they know it doesn't mean anything. So suddenly that just becomes it's not a racist symbol, but now it's the, we're going to laugh at you for thinking this is a racist symbol. It's so crazy. It's so crazy.
Clown World 2020.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Bozo for president 2020. That's where we're headed.
All right, anything else? 2020. I just want to say, I've been listening to your, to the, InfoWars for over a year now. I always keep hearing I always hear on the media that, oh, you're this and that, and, you know, not necessarily you in general, but just Jones. I took a shot for myself. I've been listening to a year. I haven't seen anything about you guys that says anything about the mainstream media. So, you know, if you have people who are against InfoWars and say all these things and don't listen to them, how about you try giving a shot? Give a chance. Be open-minded. Go on their product. Go listen to them. And you tell me whether or not they say on the media or is true based on what you hear on the radio. You do that, and that's how you make your own opinion. I did that, and that's the fight we're in. You have to think for yourself. You have to explore for yourself. And I know some people don't do research on their own, and that's why they come up with crazy things like what we just talked about. I mean, I even showed evidence about people about you, and they're still even closed-minded to the idea about these things being about you are false. I mean, I even showed one of my close friends who still dislikes you, even articles about things that you've claimed in the past that were true.
Yep.
And then he still was like, no, you guys are, you're brainwashed, this and that. But I mean,
you're the brainwashed one, Frank. You've been brainwashed by us. We got you with our hypnotism. Now, that's a great point, man. And you know, kudos to you for being open-minded, for not letting somebody else sway you and decide for you, and for listening for yourself, because that's really all it takes. And you might disagree with our politics, but you can't disagree with our facts. I mean, all these stories that I have today are all mainstream media. I mean, I'm not breaking any ground with what I'm talking about. I'm talking about stuff that the New York Times and the Daily Mail and Yahoo and Google. I mean, I'm just reading the news. I'm just making the connections. I'm just drawing the lines between the dots, between the data, nodes. There's a line between it. There's a commonality. There's a common move that's being made. And then you can go deeper and you can do research and you can open your mind and understand that this is all a plan, et cetera, et cetera. But just from surface level, you know, thank you for being open-minded and for trying to spread the word. I know, I mean, people can, like you said, think that you're brainwashed. They think that you're trying to trick them. I mean, it's very weird the control that the mainstream media has over people's minds and the fear. You know, there's the quote from Dune, fear is the mind killer, right? And that's exactly what it was, what it is. And it's why the mainstream media uses fear to override your sense, override your logic. They put you in a do or die situation, in a flee or fight situation, and it overrides your logical ability and causes you to react in a way that they can pre-program. I mean, they know about this and they use it, and it's really shocking how effective it is. So thanks so much, Frank, for the call and for standing up for us and for trying to spread the word, man. Keep it up, because for every five that you get who just sort of go, they're crazy, you're brainwashed, you get one who goes, you know what, I'll give it a try. Or you know what that guy said makes a little sense. Or I might look into this a little bit more. And that's where the victories come. So don't give up. Spread the links. Spread the word. And if you can, go to InfoWarsStore.com and make a purchase, because that's how we do everything that we do here. The only reason we exist is because you go to InfoWarsStore.com and you fill our tanks and keep us running at full capacity. More on the other side. Third hour starts in 1 minute.
Infowars.com/show.
The fight
for the future is now.
This is the War Room with Owen Troyer at Infowars.com/show.
John Cleese did an oopsie. He dared offend the diversity gods. Some years ago, I opined that London was not really an English city anymore. Since then, virtually all my friends from abroad have confirmed my observation. So there must be some truth in it. I know also that London was the UK city that voted most strongly to remain in the EU. This is a reiteration of Cleese's previous 2011 comments, when he said that London was the most cosmopolitan city on Earth, but that it doesn't feel English. I mean, I love having different cultures around, but when the parent culture kind of dissipates, you're left thinking, well, what's going on? Sounds pretty racist to me. I mean, it's not like white British people are a minority in London and have been for years. It's not like over 41% of London's population is foreign-born. It's not like London has the second highest foreign-born population out of any city in the world. London is clearly the most English city you could imagine. Left-wing comedian Dom Jolly bravely risked the fawning NPC adulation of absolutely everyone in his industry by condemning Cleese. It is basically a very racist tweet. Secondly, it's a racist tweet by a man who lives on a Caribbean island. The irony of that is insane. And to his credit, he is an authority on racism, because he lives in one of the most diverse communities in the entire UK. The Cotswolds, which is only 95% white. The irony of that is insane. But apparently Cleese's opinion is completely invalidated because he moved to the Caribbean. That's right. John Cleese is so racist that he chose to move to an area of the world that's full of black people, about whom he said, quote, "The relationship between the races is absolutely superb. The people there are really kind." Have you ever heard such flagrant racism? Meanwhile, the diversity-loving anti-racists chose to live in the whitest areas possible and virtue signal about how much they love non-white people from the comfort of their Aryan countryside ethno-state strongholds. But John Cleese is the racist, and he's a hypocrite, because he followed through on his conviction that London was a shithole by moving out of London. What a hypocrite. Mr. Part and Parcel chimed in. "These comments make John Cleese sound like he's in character as Basil Fawlty. Londoners know that our diversity is our greatest strength. We are proudly the English capital, a European city and a global hub." Precisely. I mean, diversity is such a strength in London that Somali parents are sending their kids back to Africa because it's becoming so violent.
He said to me, "Now that my son is in Africa, I sleep better at night."
But then again, it's unfair to blame knife crime on diversity, given that only 73% of offenders are non-white. I mean, if it was 100%, maybe. But a mere 73%? That's only three quarters. A tiny minority. And of course diversity is a strength. That's why, in order to establish such a self-evident truth, they need to resort to threats of career ruination, social ostracization, and prison time for any heretic who dares question the sacred mantra of multiculturalism. That's why the British Army is putting out leaflets saying that anyone who complains about the loss of British identity is a right-wing extremist, because they're that secure in the belief that diversity is such an obvious strength. Diversity is such an obvious strength that Labour MPs tell grooming gang victims to shut up for the sake of diversity. Diversity is such an obvious strength that councils across the country deliberately ignored the industrial-level sex trafficking of children and young girls for the sake of diversity. Diversity is such an obvious strength that a rail company removed every Morrissey poster throughout its network because one person complained about Morrissey having once said similar things to John Cleese. Diversity is such an obvious strength that the oldest record store in the world banned sales of Morrissey records because Morrissey once said similar things to John Cleese. That's how diversity works. So yes, John Cleese is obviously a racist bigot. Living on his Caribbean island, surrounded by black people who he describes as kind and superb. Such an obvious racist. And you know that's true because all these left-wing celebrities living in their white ethno-state bubbles, parroting progressive talking points in complete obedience to the ruthless ideological conformity of their industry.
The latest by Paul Joseph Watson. Find the full video at Infowars.com. We'll be back. Third hour of the War Room begins now. Harrison Smith sitting in for Owen Schroyer. I'm going to blow your mind in this hour, folks. I'm going to read some stories and connect some stories that really should put it all in perspective. And I really like what that caller Tim from Washington mentioned with the Georgia Guidestones, because that's such a good thing to point to. Because I've been talking about this for a while, but I sort of forgot about the Georgia Guidestones. I'm focused more on the, you know, Council of Foreign Relations and Bilderberg and, you know, sort of these shadowy groups. And because you can see it, you know, in abstract, you can understand what's going on. But Tim's so right that you point to the Georgia Guidestones as like, there it is. That's the thing. That's what they're trying to do. That's what this is all pointing towards. That is it. Because, and I'm talking about this quite a bit, people see bad things happening. And I think they either, you know, I was saying it on Off Limits the other day. It's like, it's almost understandable why liberals think everybody's so dumb, because they'd have to be this dumb if things, for things to be this bad and it's not on purpose, right? So like Monsanto for years has Roundup with glyphosate that causes cancer. And that's not an accident, okay? They knew that that was the case. And anybody who tried to reveal that this was the case, they targeted and they tried to destroy. That's not the actions of an innocent company. That's not the actions of people who were unaware of what they were doing. They're very aware of what they're doing. And this is another thing that gets with me, sort of just sticks in my craw with socialists especially, because they see the bad stuff happening often, and yet their comprehension of what's happening cannot exceed money. They stop at money. They just think that's it. It's all about money, right? They see, you know, going to war in Iraq, it was about oil. They just wanted that oil. It was the darn oil companies that did it. That's literally, I mean, that's as simple as they can handle, or like it's as complex as they can handle, is that sort of simplicity of just like the oil companies wanted oil because they're greedy and they want money. So they went to war with Iraq, and that's it. And they'll stop there. But if you look at the actions of the New World Order crowd, of the neoliberals, of the progressives, they do things that do not make them money. They are far more concerned with ideology. And guess what? Here's the secret. They have all the money. They invent money. They create money by pressing a button on a computer. They have all the money. So they love money because they can use money as a tool, and it definitely helps. And if they can make money, they will. But at the end of the day, they have all the money. They have all the money. They have it all. It is the Fed. It is the bankers. I mean, literally, they just print money, literally. So you can't just say, oh, they just are doing this for money, because they have all the money. So that doesn't make any sense. And you only have to look at the media for the perfect example. Right there. The media. Disney. Fox. Look at the Star Wars trilogy. Okay? Look at Game of Thrones. Okay? The Star Wars trilogy is just awful. The new one. They ruined Star Wars. They just took a beloved, like, cultural icon that just, you know, worldwide, just most famous intellectual property of all time, beloved by men, women, children of all ages, and told a story of sacrifice and faith and the individual, and they just ripped it up. They just destroyed, they just fed it to the gaping maw of feminism and social justice. Okay? And they're losing money. It's the least popular Star Wars ever. I mean, they're still making money because, you know, people are sheep and they'll just go see movies and they'll think that they're good. But it's not about making money. They will lose money to progress their agenda. This is a key thing you have to understand. They have an agenda that is higher to them in importance than money. So how can I explain this to you? Why? I just have to look at things like CNN. From May 28th, yesterday, CNN announces more layoffs as Zucker reveals network is losing $10 million a year. Okay, so these people are losing $10 million a year on their pathological dedication to their insane ideology. It's not about making money. If they wanted to make money, they would stop being hardline progressive jackasses. They would tell the truth every once in a while. It's far more important for them to use their platforms as a tool, as a propaganda network, as a disinformation dissemination outlet. It's far more important to them than being accurate, having honor, and making money. They don't care about that. So there you go. CNN announces more layoffs as Zucker reveals network is losing $10 million a year. And then, of course, on top of that, you have things from earlier this month, like Salon Media announcing a $5 million sale after the CEO resigns. Bankruptcy and liquidation threatened if the deal falls through. Now, I've already floated this idea before, but can we buy Salon Media? $5 million, that's bargain prices. That's a big discount, $5 million. So, you know, I don't know. InfoWars presents Salon. I like it. I like the ring of that. And then, of course, you know, just more of CNN. You know, they reveal they're losing $10 million a year. They're also consolidating their European offices, meaning they're basically closing down huge chunks of their CNN, or I'm sorry, of their UK presence at CNN. Of course, the story recently, Vice Media gets $250 million in debt funding from George Soros and other investors. And this comes on the heel of Disney putting $400 million into Vice Media and now saying it's worthless. So in case you needed any proof, ladies and gentlemen, they don't care about money. They care much more about propaganda and the power of their media industry. They spend almost $500 million, $400 million to support Vice Media. Vice Media blows through it in like a year, and then they give Vice Media another $250 million. I mean, what the hell? They don't care about money. They just print money. They just give money to whoever they want to empower. It's a tool for them to empower people. It's not the point of what they're doing. The point of what they're doing is the establishment of the New World Order, is building themselves up and placing themselves as gods among humans who they see as lowly, fallen, and ugly. Can you imagine what InfoWars would do with $250 million? My God. But we don't have $250 million because we don't toe the line. We don't serve on the behalf of billionaires like George Soros. That's why we don't have that money. Okay? So we only have, cruise ahead of me, InfoWarsStore.com. We only have our audience. We only have you going to the store, taking advantage of our just obnoxiously high percentage off sales, 60% off InfoWars Life. I don't understand how this is making us money, but I'm not the mathematician. So 60% off all InfoWars Life. Take advantage of our obnoxiously low prices and go to InfoWarsStore.com and give us just some small percentage of what these propaganda outlets like Vice are just handed by George Soros. Just George Soros sitting there, just keep writing stories about dildos and drugs and I will give you all the money you need. Oh, God. They're just sleepwalking us into the death of humanity. And at the same time, while we're on the topic of the media and the media control, we have Dr. Owen Linehan. I think it's Owen Linehan, E-O-I-N. It's an Irish name. I believe it's pronounced Owen. Dr. Owen Linehan is kicked off of Twitter. Now, he was an analyst who revealed Antifa's connections with journalists, which is very interesting because yesterday you also had Nick Monroe being kicked off Twitter for generally the same thing. So that's where we're at now with Twitter. They're not only are they not even like pretending that people are breaking their rules. Literally, if you just report on the fact that the media is in bed with Antifa, Twitter will kick you off for revealing their secrets. All right. Are we seeing the connections yet? Are we drawing the lines, folks?
The War Room. InfoWars.com/show. We'll be right back.
right, welcome back, folks. We are going to go right out to the phone lines for this segment. Jefferson in Virginia brings up a very good point. I'm glad you've hung on for so long, Jefferson, because this is a very big topic that I've been talking about for a long time, but now it's in the news, and that is China's rare earth minerals and how they are now bringing that into play, bringing that to bear in the trade war that's going on with that country. So Jefferson from Virginia on China and their rare earth minerals, what have you got for me?
Hey, Harrison, thanks for having me on. It's Absolutely. An important subject, and we touch on it, but we never talk about what the solution to the problem is, and the economic infeasibility of mining rare earth minerals in America is the problem, and the solution is switching over to thorium as an energy source. We have lots of thorium we could mine and use for energy in molten salt reactors, and in the byproduct of doing all that mining, we would also mine up a whole bunch of rare earth minerals. So we would have our own supply. We wouldn't have to worry about the Chinese.
Well, that's very interesting. I know. I mean, to me, this is a larger geopolitical, you know, it gives a lot of reasons to why a lot of big geopolitical moves are made anywhere from South Africa to Afghanistan. There are certain places that have massive amounts of rare earth minerals that don't have strong governments and allows people like China to come in and exploit them. I know that Nick Begich has made a very big point of talking about the lack of mining in Alaska and says that there are just tons of minerals in Alaska. I assume that would include rare earth minerals. What do you think about that, Jefferson?
Nick talks about rare earth mineral mining as well, but the economic feasibility of it is a hard thing to get over because there has to be something that you can sell along with them that produces revenue. And the answer is what Kirk Sorensen is telling everybody is that there's a technology that produces energy that uses thorium, which is abundant in the Earth's crust. And if we just mine the thorium, that would
be cold fusion with thorium. Is that just a?
It's just simple fission. But what happens with thorium is that when you put it near enriched uranium, it absorbs a neutron and it becomes enriched uranium. So it's inert until you put it near something very rare, which is enriched uranium, and then it actually converts to enriched uranium and becomes the fuel and the shielding for the reactor at the same time. So it's an amazing technology that you should do a special report on, especially on Off Limits or something. If you just looked into Kirk Sorensen and what's called FLIBE, F-L-I-B-E, his technology is something that's about to be stolen by Bill Gates at TerraPower. They're trying to basically steal the technology away from Kirk Sorensen, who studied this extensively and been going to like TED Talks for years, telling the world that there is essentially limitless energy in thorium if we just make use of it properly. And it's a very safe reactionary process when it comes to fission. It's simple. It can't melt down. It's like too good to be true, and that's the problem. Everybody acts like it would never work.
Right, because I've looked into it too, and that was sort of my impression was, I was like, well, I don't know enough to understand this. It sounds too good to be true, and some people are saying it is too good to be true. I'm going to leave that to the scientists. But it's very interesting, and you bring up a very good point, although I don't know, there are so many rare earth minerals that we require. That'll definitely solve the problems for one or two, and it also just goes into the idea that we need to be focusing on nuclear energy. I mean, it's this energy source that we just don't take advantage of. And I actually have a story here. After coal, forest-rich Finland will need to import biomass to keep up. So, you know, what they're doing now, they don't have nuclear energy in Europe, but they're trying to get rid of their coal stations. So they literally are just cutting down forests and burning them for the electricity. So it's like, man, if we want to get serious about, the environment and providing energy that doesn't damage the environment, we got to go with nuclear, and we got to go with something like thorium because it doesn't have the inherent dangers that, earth-ending dangers that typical nuclear energy has. Very great point, Jefferson, and I will definitely look into that and hopefully be able to deliver on that request that I do a special report, because I am very interested in this, and it's something that people tweet at me all the time. They're always saying, why don't you do alternative energies? I just don't get science that much. It takes a lot of research, and I haven't done it yet, but I should. I should, so I will. Thanks so much for the call. Anything else before I let you go here, Jefferson?
Well, it goes back somewhat to the Georgia Guidestones, where they don't want us to have solutions because they want to have an excuse to depopulate the planet. If you go to thorium, it becomes like gold. It becomes a basis for currency, and it could be the new money. as well. I mean, it solves so many problems. That's why they don't want us to know about it. And they had the Department of Energy declare it a nuclear waste when there's nothing nuclear about it, unless it's sitting next to enriched uranium, which is a very rare substance. So you know something's up when they handcuff us and tell us we're crazy to talk about this subject. So please do this report.
Awesome, awesome. Well, go ahead and tweet at me, Harrison H. Smith. Any information you think I need to see or is super important, send that to me there, and I will take a look at that because it is very interesting. So thanks so much for the call, Jefferson. Let's go last 3 minutes here. Richard in Texas talking about the history of Islam. You mean the history of peace? It's all just they're just inventing algebra and fanning each other with palm leaves. That's what you mean, right, Richard?
Well, it's interesting. During the kind of set up to World War II, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who is the Palestinian Muslim leader, he was basically just against Jews moving to the area, but he wasn't like violent towards them. Then as the war kind of ramped up, there began to be some murders, things like that. Then he started to pal up with Hitler and actually started visiting him in Germany. And he actually, by the end of the war, was touring the death camps with Eichmann and, you know, was full on Nazi. And what a lot of people don't know is the Ayatollah Khomeini, when he was exiled in France, he actually wrote his own version of Mein Kampf called Ayatollah Khomeini's Mein Kampf.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like literally he was a Nazi. And one of the titles of the Ayatollah is Aryan of Aryans. And so this led into, there was three full divisions of the SS that were entirely Muslim. And, you know, so these, in order to join the SS, you had to be the most devout Nazis, and you had to be able to trace your lineage back as an Aryan for multiple generations. And what a lot of people don't know is most Arab groups are Aryan in nature. And the radicalization of Muslims, when you look at the beginning of Muslims blowing things up and mindlessly killing people, like this happened under Muhammad, like he was very warlike. And then it kind of shifted more towards Arab culture for many seasons of history. But when the modern violent Islam, that was their partnership with Hitler. And you look at, there was an entire Croatian Muslim division of the SS that was extremely violent, extremely barbarous. You know, like it's just really crazy that no one's discussing this. They say, if you're a nationalist or if you say the word patriot, you're a Nazi, when literally there is a number of current Muslim groups that can directly trace their beginnings to Nazism.
Wow, man, yet another topic that I feel woefully underversed in. That is very interesting. Richard from Texas, thank you for the call. Very informative. I knew a little bit about that. And, you know, and it goes hand in hand with Napoleon. Napoleon did the same thing. He sort of half converted to Islam because he saw them as very warlike and thought he could use them in his wars. So this is just sort of maybe a continuation of the conquering mentality. They'll utilize Muslims because they know they can. Interesting.
Infowars.com/show.
There's cucks.
You're fucking a white male.
And then there's the cuck slayer. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer.
Harrison Smith sitting in today for Owen Schroyer on this May 29th, 2019 episode of the War Room. And, you know, I'm just here to commentate like a sports commentator watching the silliest game of football of all time. That's how I feel here, floating above the news and looking down at the absurdity. Just a quick recap here of what we talked about today. Robert Mueller comes out and reiterates that Trump is innocent and that everything he needs to say is in the report. Innocent, no collusion, and not his job to charge for obstruction, which, of course, the Democrats have decided means we should impeach him. Okay, clown world. Finland is getting rid of coal. They don't want to burn coal, so instead they're cutting down forests and burning the trees. Okay? Clown world. They want to stop anti-Semitism in Germany, which is caused by immigrants. So they're targeting anti-immigrant parties. Okay? Clown world. We're so backwards. The World Health Organization defines transgenderism as not a mental illness, but playing video games is a mental illness because we live in clown world. And of course, Border Patrol, instead of stopping people from crossing the border, are busing them farther into the country and giving them jobs because we live in clown world. At least we can laugh at it together. Here is a clown world montage by our very own Darren McBreen.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha!
Get the f*** out of here, you naughty!
You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed, you laughed, and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
I'm gonna grow a magnificent pair of breasts.
I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet. And when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time. And I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes.
That was amazing. I mean, that was equal parts hilarious and terrifying. My God. My God. That was impressive. I'm kind of disturbed by that. Ooh. I was not prepared for that. I got to be honest. That was, ooh, Darren, well done. Yeah. Oh, they're crazy, man. Jeez and Pete's. If you're listening on radio, do yourself a favor and go find that video on Infowars.com and share that, because wow. Okay. That bowled me over. I gotta figure out where I am here. I mean, that was weird, man. Those people, God, there's something demonic, man. There is like really an evil spirit that is just embodied in these people. It is really weird. I saw a picture the other day. It was an article that was about pro-life and pro-abortion people protesting against each other. And on the front, the main page had a picture of a girl on it. And she wasn't wearing anything in particular, but I could just tell by immediately looking at her. I'm like, okay, she's on the pro-abortion side just right away. You know, there's just something. She had this just like, she had big bags under her eyes and just like this hollow kind of look, and she was yelling. It may have actually been that girl from that video, although this was a still photo of it. And it's just like, there's just something inhuman that's just like, they're just dead behind the eyes. Shark's eyes, doll's eyes. But for real, there is a demonic force that we are at war with. And I saw somebody posting that as well. It was after the Planned Parenthood protest we had this weekend. And on Twitter, you know, somebody said something about, like, the InfoWars people are fighting Satan or something. And I just, it's like, you don't understand how true that is. It's like, the longer I work here, the more I'm like, all right, there is something, it's not a different spirit in each people. It's the same spirit that drives them all. It's the same inhuman, anti-human, just kind of like, they just love death and destruction and suffering. And it's just, it's like they're possessed, man. It's like they're all possessed by a single spirit. Wow, truly disturbing. I'm telling you, I was not prepared for that video. I was expecting something goofy and fun. That was disturbing to me. All right. Moving on. Didn't I tell you I was going to blow your mind? I probably haven't done it. I haven't gotten to the big ones yet. But here we go. Let's dive in, shall we? And apparently this is not a new story, although it has been updated. And it was updated because this is a patent. This is a patent that Google filed. And as of the 28th of this month, as of yesterday, the application status has gone active. What is this technology that Google is patenting? Nervous system manipulation by electromagnetic fields from monitors. Physiological effects have been observed in a human subject in response to stimulation of the skin with weak electromagnetic fields that are pulsed with certain frequencies near half a hertz or 2.4 hertz to excite sensory resonance. So what this is saying is that they can manipulate your nervous system, the control system of your body. They can manipulate by flashing patterns at a certain frequency that are indistinguishable by your eyes. You can't tell that these flashes or these pulses are being emitted, but you feel them and they affect you, and they can manipulate the electromagnetic stimulation of your nervous system through screens. Okay? Crazy stuff. And as of yesterday, the application status is active. And it was funny because just now I was searching this just to double check. Because you hear something this crazy, you want to double check. And it turns out one of the top results of it is an Alex Jones video from several years ago, probably when this was first put out. Alex Jones hopped on it and saw that. So I realized that this isn't a new thing, but this is something you need to understand. This is what Google is patenting. This is what they're doing. Nervous system manipulation by screens, by computer screens, by monitors. But they're not the only ones doing it. Mark Zuckerberg actually are funding studies and have patents for wireless mind control, brain implants, where they can control, once again, control your nervous system, control your actions, control your thoughts. What they've done is been able to implant this chip in a monkey, and by wireless signals to the chip in the monkey's brain, they can operate the monkey like a puppet, control him like a robot. So that's what Mark Zuckerberg's doing. Google's figuring out how to manipulate your nervous system through the screens, but that's fine. I'm sure that's fine.
Infowars.com/show.
Final segment of the War Room. Harrison Smith sitting in for Owen Schroyer. Join me in just about 1 hour at 7 p.m. I will be doing my nightly off-limits broadcast, but to save myself a little bit of time and energy, I'll be mostly playing reports today. They'll all be reports focusing on and centered around the abortion debate. We have just fantastic reporters here at InfoWars, Caitlin Bennett, Millie Weaver, Greg Reese, Jake Lloyd, and they all do fantastic work, and recently they've come out with a lot of abortion topic kind of stuff, along with the Planned Parenthood protest that we attended this Sunday. It's a hot topic, so I'll be playing those reports. And so if you want to see those, please join me on InfoWars.com homepage. Off Limits is the name of the show, and that will start at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, as it does every weekday, Infowars.com. And you can support what I do there, what I'm doing here, what Owen and Alex and David, what we all do every day by going to InfowarsStore.com. And you also support the amazing reporters we have all over the country capturing the big events, first person, being on the ground, on the scene, independent media, usually the only ones there that aren't fully controlled. So absolutely important what our reporters are doing, and they all just totally knocked it out of the park. I mean, especially like Kaylin Bennett and Millie Weaver, everything they do gets hundreds of thousands of views, goes totally viral, retweeted by President Trump. All of that is because of you. You can all be proud of having contributed to this movement, to this movement towards human freedom worldwide, 1776 worldwide, all funded by InfoWarsStore.com and people like you making purchases. So in this last segment, I have a little stack of news here that I'm just going to tear right through because I told you I'd get to these stories. I got 8 minutes to do so. This is an interesting headline because of the way they write it. Your smartphone is not listening to you, but your free apps are definitely spying on you. Now, why would they say it like this? Why not just say your free apps are spying on you? Why do they have to pretend like your phone isn't listening to you? It probably is. I mean, who's to say? Why wouldn't it be? They have full access to your phone, your microphone, your camera. I mean, why not? But just another example of the mainstream media looking like InfoWars looked 10 years ago, except we're not telling you your smartphone is not listening to you. We're telling you it almost certainly is, or at least can. Teachers allegedly told to favor black students in racial equity training. So they have racial equity training in New York City, and they've been told to focus on black children over white ones. So just make sure to just ignore the white children and just focus solely on the black children. That's equality. Okay. Absolutely crazy, man. Can we just institute a policy of radical deracialism? That's what I want. Radical deracialism. I want no affirmative action. I want no discrimination. If you discriminate, or even if you even ask people what their race is and it's not imminently purposeful, like if you're not actually describing them as like a police sketch to where you're trying to identify someone, so you describe their race, if it's a school or a job or anything like that, let's just go full on. You are not allowed to ask about the race. Race is not allowed to come into it. Can we just do that? Like if you get the grade, you get the grade. Okay. Full stop. Yeah. Is this a radical idea? I guess it is nowadays because teachers are being told to favor black kids and basically punish white kids for being white. At the same time, New York City education officials were demoted for being white. Bombshell lawsuit claims. Because you know what's best for black children is to not give them the best teachers. No. Demote the best teachers and put in black teachers because that's what's good. That's what's needed, right? And I've talked about this on Off Limits, so I won't go into it here. But again, just absolutely ridiculous, hurting above all the black students that they're pretending to help. Hello, like you are literally damaging the quality of their education by not letting them have good teachers, but by insisting they have black teachers. I'm not saying black teachers aren't good teachers. I'm saying if the reason you're hiring somebody is their race, you're going to get a lower quality person than if you, affirmative action or. Anyway, it's just so stupid. And here's another one, folks. SAT exam to give students adversity score in bid to level playing field. I know it's not a news story, but it goes hand in hand with those basically saying we're going to give you a score better than you've earned. Right. So what does that mean? That means you're probably going to get into a school that you are not actually qualified for. We helped you cheat and helped you get in there. We gave you extra points. So now you're going to go to a school that you're not actually qualified for. You're going to have a lot harder time than the other students there that did qualify for it, so it's going to be harder for you to do that. Instead of taking the best and brightest of, every black generation and setting them up for success by sending them to a school that fits for them, no, we're going to put you in a school that is better than you're actually qualified for. We're going to set you up for failure. You're going to still have the debt. You're not going to go to a good, a decent school that where you can be successful. You're going to go to a great school where you're going to fail. That's the plan for affirmative action in education. Absolutely outrageous. As more millennials rent, more startups want to lend to them. So that's right. You thought renting an apartment was bad? Now there are companies where you can take out debt to pay your rent. So instead of getting a mortgage and, you know, putting money towards a house that you own, you'll simply go into debt to rent. This is the company store paradigm that Alex Jones talks about. This is the perpetual debt system in which the elites are trying to enslave you. So even just to live, just to exist, just have a roof over your head, you'll have to go into debt. You know, in the same way that now they're doing, instead of taking out a loan for school, you'll just be an indentured servant. We'll just garnish a portion of your wages once you graduate from school. We'll just pay for your school, and then you'll work for us for an indefinite amount of time. It's called indentured servitude. Now it's being sold by progressives to other progressives as some sort of good thing. No, it's indentured servitude. Michigan's hate crime unit won't be thought police. That's what we're being assured. So, I mean, sure. Sure it won't. But yeah, we have to have a hate crime division. Why do we have hate crimes? A crime is a crime. A crime is a crime. All of this intersectional crap has got to go, man. I mean, none of it can stay. None of it makes any sense. It's all easily manipulatable. It all just throws the scales out of balance and creates a snowball effect that causes the chaos that we're in now. New York State Assemblyman Jeff Dinowitz gives the finger to parents of vaccine-injured children. New York State Assemblyman Jeff Dinowitz gave his constituents the middle finger as he strode into a press conference where he's championing taking away New York State's citizens, the right to their own body. So they're trying to pass forcible inoculation, forced vaccines, and people that don't like the idea of the government being able to forcibly inject stuff into them, they get the finger. They get the finger. This is another crazy story. The Florida governor and cabinet are being sued over their plans to meet in Israel. Now, this was from yesterday, but basically there's a law that says all of the government activities in Florida have to be open to the public, but the entire, executive branch of the Florida government went to Israel and is holding a meeting there. And basically there's watchdogs groups going, you can't hold a meeting in a foreign country where your constituents have no oversight over you. And so they're suing about this. That story was from yesterday. And then today, they just went ahead and had the meeting anyway. So there it is. Ron DeSantis signs bill banning anti-Semitism in school, and he did so in Jerusalem. So there he is in Jerusalem signing a bill for Florida. What? What? Why? Well, what is this? You're literally governing from Israel? You're governing Florida from Israel. Okay, that's great. That's fantastic. And of course, what he was signing was the anti-Semitism bill, aka the anti-First Amendment bill. In other words, conflating criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism and making that illegal. And in fact, you have groups of Jews in Florida saying, what are you doing? You are conflating criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. This not only empowers Israel above the stance of just another country that we're allies with to something that cannot be criticized in the media. Okay, that's outrageous. Foreign country can't be criticized in American media. What? That doesn't make any sense. And it's basically belittling anti-Semitism. You know, it's saying, well, if you criticize Israel, that's anti-Semitism. Like, no, anti-Semitism is something different, and it's bad. There still shouldn't be laws against it because it's still speech. It's still thought. You can't make thought illegal. But very interesting. I have a video. I can't go to it right now because I don't have time. But suffice it to say, it's a robot with a gun shooting balloons by itself. It can assist counter-terror ops and is already operational in several countries, says Seth Frantzman. There it is. There's a video. Little robot shooting a gun at balloons. If you've ever read Fahrenheit 451, you have a pretty good idea of what the Hound looks like, right? China's communists fund the Prime Minister of New Zealand. That's what America was told. And then, of course, you have more uncertainty and back and forth with Iran. We have Bolton and the neocons just driving us into war with that country, and Trump doing everything he can to keep us out. God bless Donald Trump. Thank you so much for joining me. Join me in 1 hour on Infowars.com for Off Limits.